is time for No Nurses But News with Dr. New. We'll be back in a bit. Hang on and enjoy.
Are we on?
Did you hear the jingle? Did you hear the jingle end?
I heard the song end.
Didn't no jingle. Jingle. You're live, nevertheless.
Okay. Hi, everybody. We're live, nevertheless. And welcome to No News Is Good News on this October 24th. And joining us today, we have Mr. P. Crackers has popped in, so we may be hearing a thing or two from him along the way. He's sort of dropped into being a co-host here for Thursday nights. And our special guest tonight, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation, is Cameron Day. If you guys recall, I read most of or part of a blog post that he had written on August 23rd on my show because I really like the information and the presentation, and as you regulars know, it's a topic that's near and dear to my heart. So welcome, Cameron.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
And the topic of your blog post that inspired me was why I am no longer a light worker. So I guess the place to start would be your transition, your background as a light worker, and what prompted this revelation?
Well, what prompted the revelation was the realization that there was what we could call a controlled opposition force in effect that was duping everyone that it possibly could dupe who has come into this realm to undo the deceptions, the lies, the illusions of separation that have been enforced upon and imposed upon human consciousness. And this controlled opposition, this false light, presented itself as the resistance, presented itself as a group of angels and ascended masters and beings of light that were working towards the end that we all incarnated to work towards. But of course, we have that pesky veil of forgetfulness when we incarnate and we lose the bulk of our memories and awareness. So when this group presented itself to me at the tender age of about 6 or possibly 7 years old, they were able to convince me that they were the good guys, that they would help me in the mission that I came in here to pursue. And that they would be guiding me along the way. Now, fortunately, they weren't able to distort my perceptions too heavily. I was never one to give my power away to any external authority or any external source. So I didn't get too heavily swayed by ideas of ascended masters and archangels, and have never really been a big fan of hierarchy in general. But at the same time, they were able to get me to go on dream time missions. For the most part, that was the main way that they used me, was to go and fight these mock battles, in a sense, against the dark side. And of course, the false light, the false dark, are just two sides of the same coin. So even those on the planet that serve darkness, at least they're somewhat more clued into the greater program, because those that have been pulled into the so-called light worker category are literally being drained of their life force and worked near to death in many cases in order to pursue this controlled opposition agenda of battling against the dark side, when the reality is that those battles aren't really producing the effect that we're after, which is to remove the entire corrupt demiurge from this planetary sphere and ultimately from the entire universe. And so what clued me in was, it was a series of events, actually. During these Dreamtime missions and excursions, they try to wipe your memory so that you don't recall anything the next day. But I am fortunate to have very strong dream recall, so I could remember a lot of what had occurred. And I could also remember the point where my memories had been successfully blunted or blotted out. And at a certain point, I engaged one of the leaders, one of the so-called ascended masters, and got to have a close look at him, so to speak, got to vibe him up close and personal, and didn't really like the sense that I got from him. And then the particular mission after that went completely pear-shaped. And as I thought about it the next day, and for many days afterwards, the realization that I had been working with beings that weren't really doing what they claimed to be doing began to dawn on me. And as I pulled on that thread more and more, the web of lies came unraveled, and I was able to see the truth of what was really going on, which is that these beings that are posing as light beings are actually part of the control matrix of the corrupt demiurge. And they have no interest whatsoever in undoing it. In fact, they're doing everything they can to keep it intact by distracting beings who have come in to undo it, getting us to do the light worker rigmarole, whatever that might be. In my case, they used me as a dream warrior based on certain tests and initiations that they had put me through as a child, and that sort of singled me out as that would be where they could get the most energy out of me. Because their ultimate agenda is to drain energy. It's to feed themselves the energy of human consciousness. Because Earth is essentially an energetic farm, and they consider us their livestock. As cold and callous as that is, that's the truth from their perspective. Now, of course, our truth is that no, we don't want to be livestock. We don't want to give them our life force. We want to be free to create and to be part of creation, as opposed to being sequestered into this little zone where we currently exist.
Well, the fundamental tenet of Gnosticism is to eschew the binary choice and to look within for the third choice, so to speak. So the concept of the duality, or the false duality, I should say, is something that we talk about quite a bit, especially the multiple layers that it occurs in. And from what you described, as far as being approached as a light worker, the same themes look pretty obvious to me. One is the play to the ego, and I'm sort of noticing a lot of that lately in the light and lover camp, is quite frankly, these people are getting pretty ugly on the outside. They are becoming hostile and vindictive and dogmatic, and you know, if you try to even show them that they're not walking the talk that they speak, it just makes things worse. Have you noticed this ramping up as well too?
I have noticed that, and I got a large amount of feedback from that article, and a good portion of it was negative or somewhat attacking, oftentimes judgmental, a little bit of holier than thou thrown in, plenty of accusations of myself being deluded by my own ego, and that I shouldn't dare to question the ascended masters and the archangels.
And you shouldn't dare to have another false god before me either.
Correct.
Where would you like to take it from here, sir? Anything in particular? Would you like to keep it up in modern? What's modern current events? What's going on in the current now here? Do you want to get into a little bit more of the philosophy involved to try to explain to these people the false duality? Because I'm finding that a lot of them just don't get it, no matter how I try to explain. It's like, you know, you split the good and the bad, and then you split the bad again, and what do you have? You have two halves of a bad, or you have a quarter, and this is apparently advanced math for a lot of the Lighten lovers.
Yeah, let's start with a bit of the big picture, and then we can drill down into some more current events, so to speak.
Great.
And I think go ahead.
I was going to say, do you want to start off with the quick Gnostic cosmology, the corrupt demiurge, and take it from there, so that the people understand who we're going to be speaking of as far as archangels and deities and things?
Yeah, definitely. So, just to preface this, is that my understanding of it is maybe a little different from the mainline Gnostic literature that has been preserved. I feel that what we have is a valuable gift, but it's an incomplete record of what they knew and what they were able to write down and record. But essentially, the way I see the corrupt demiurge is it's a consciousness that decided that it wanted to be worshipped. It wanted to be seen as the creator God. It wanted to have other beings be subservient to it. Now, in the greater context of the universe, this whole universe is a free will zone. And the prime universal directive is that you can create in whatever way you choose as long as you don't harm others while doing it. And so free will is paramount. Now, this being decided to use its free will to usurp the free will of others. And it was an idea that hadn't never been explored. It was a unique concept in a sense. So there was the aspect of discovering something new, creating something that had never been created. But there was also this idea of usurping God, of being the one that dethrones God in a sense. And my understanding of God is an infinite source from which this universe was created. Now we'll come back to that in a little bit. So when I say God, I'm using it as the same as infinite source. Sometimes I'll just say source. I'll interchange these words quite a bit. So this being went about getting other beings to worship it. And it also went about recruiting other beings to help expand this empire of worship. And so this worship of the corrupt demiurge as God, as Yahweh, if you will, is predicated on an individual believing that it is separated from God and that it needs to seek an external authority figure. It needs to find the external God that it is separated from. And so the demiurge was only able to pull this scam, this con, on young developing worlds or the species in early stages of development upon those worlds. It could only come into society and say, I am the Lord thy God and you shall have no others before me. That could only work on relatively immature races that were in a bit of confusion already, however they got themselves to that place. But it was able to do that successfully and then able to expand its empire as it recruited other beings to take positions of authority within that structure. And those beings in the position of authority became known as the archangels, as we call them. And as time went on, the scam got harder to do because there weren't that many worlds that, and races that would succumb to that scam. So a new division was formed of the ranks of the demiurgic beings. This would become the dark side. And the other division would, of course, continue to put on the airs of authority of divine right to rule. And the two sides would pit themselves against each other. so that they could convince worlds that the light was good and that the dark was bad. Or they could convince individuals, perhaps, that resonated with the idea of dominating others, that they could come to the dark side of the demiurge, and that they could have that power and dominion that they wanted. And then the light side would be the ones who would put on the airs of loving, non-judging, and non-discerning, where you simply accepted the teachings that were handed to you and then set about doing whatever spiritual exercises that they gave you so that you could move up into their rarefied realms. And this scam has been incredibly effective. And focusing in on our lovely planet that we live on, the original, let's say, experience that the human race had was with a band of pirates, as I call them, that came in and offered technology and information to the locals. And they found them at the opportune moment, or they, let's say, they intervened at the opportune moment when this species was becoming technologically advanced, but they hadn't grown too powerful within their technology. And it was very much an earth-based, ether-based type of technology, similar to what great minds like Tesla were developing. And so all that was in the early stages, and these beings showed up and offered technology. They offered knowledge of the universe and wisdom, because humanity had not been off planet at all at that point. And they were able to deceive the local species into accepting their gifts, their so-called gifts. And one of those gifts was sold as a DNA upgrade. But what it actually did was downgraded human DNA and made humans more subservient and more prone to worship an external authority. And so that original intervention resulted in a gradual decline of human consciousness and awareness, precipitated by multiple disasters over several hundreds of thousands of years, which traumatized the human being and made it more and more shut down, so that we arrive at the human that we have today, which externalizes authority very easily, gives power away to any person or spiritual being that claims to have an authority, worships an external god for the most part, does not understand that each individual person is an extension of the infinite source, and therefore each person is part of that divinity. And that makes the human easy to rule over, makes the human easy to harvest their energy. And now all beings of the demiurge are interested in harvesting energy. That's kind of their primary agenda, is to keep their house of cards propped up with energy. And they harvest energy in a multitude of ways. The dark side, so to speak, harvests the lower frequencies, the hate, the anger, the jealousy, the malice, the insecurities. The so-called light side harvests the energies of worship and adoration. And make no mistake, when you are listening to a channeled being or someone communicating with a channeled being, that channel is coming from one of the members of what I call the spiritual hierarchy. That's the name that I gave them, because I found it very fitting. I find them to be some of the most insidiously talented deceivers in the universe, more so even than their dark counterparts. The dark side is fairly straightforward in their aggressiveness and in their darkness. The false light, however, is very tricky, very manipulative, and they take great pleasure in deceiving beings and getting beings to worship them, because they feed on that energy of worship. They use that to maintain a lavish lifestyle in higher densities. And they have tremendous and energy of their own invested in keeping that lifestyle intact. So they work very hard to make sure that all of the beings that came in from outside of the demiurge, the beings that come from what I call the free universe, the beings that incarnated into this demiurgic control grid in order to undo it from the inside with the help of beings from the free universe on the outside, whom I call the forces of divine source light, as a way to differentiate them from the false light of the demiurgic beings. They do their best to keep all incarnated humans in a state of worship, especially those who have come in to serve as what I term divine agents to undo the demiurge. Every divine agent that they get to identify as a light worker actually feeds them energy. It allows the false light, the spiritual hierarchy, to input certain thoughts, ideas, and beliefs into their conscious and subconscious minds. A whole set of agreements are actually formed with these beings that allow them tremendous reign over the consciousness of an individual. And so those agreements have to be found and rendered null and void in order to break free from the spell of the spiritual hierarchy. So that's the situation that we find ourselves in today. Let me know if there's anything in there that I need to clarify. Dr. New, are you there?
I can hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, there you go.
I'm sorry. Yes, actually, we speak of this stuff quite a bit on my shows, and it's interesting for me and great, I think, to present it in from a different perspective, from your perspective, because I'm not a convert. I've actually always been pagan, Gnostic, so I don't have that perspective, which at times makes it difficult for me to explain it. And anybody in the chat room there, I see there's a lot of banter going about. You guys feel free to call in, 775-657-5973. If you have any questions, or the Skype is wolfspirit.switchboard, you can Skype in, and maybe we can help you out there. And one of the things, as you're explaining this, that we see the concept of worship, to keep us worshiping, and to say that that's pervasive in just about every aspect of our culture right now. We worship the dollar. We worship the sports heroes. We worship, you know, the space aliens, the Galactic Federation of Light. I mean, there is absolutely no shortage of external saviors for us at any level of society. And this is what I think a lot of people don't realize, is that the co-option of the spirit isn't something that happens in a church or in your meditation room. It happens 24 hours a day throughout the course of your life in the materium. And I think people aren't as sensitive to the amount of control that they have been able to exert over us for thousands and thousands of years now. And as you pointed out, I mean, even if we look at it in modern movies, the quote unquote dark person, the evil person, the person who's on the dark side, the anti-hero, we actually call him, generally speaking, because he flaunts his darkness, he is more well received by the audience than the light and lover, who we find out, you know, with 5 minutes left in the movie, is actually the bad guy. And suddenly, after adoring him for 90 minutes, we hate him. And that's how easily swayed we are and manipulated we are by the control systems they have in play here. Do you find, as I do, that there's definitely seems to be a ramping up and a tightening down of these systems now? I mean, I don't know if it has to do with a lot of the abject failures of December 2012 and a lot of people having to face certain realities there, but it just seems to me that people, although they're not seeing it clearly, they're becoming more and more frustrated with this isolated lone light and love concept where I don't have to take any personal action. All I have to do is sit and think happy thoughts.
Yeah, that whole thought system is losing its power. That spell is essentially losing its hold on the minds and the psyches of those who had believed in it, because it hasn't been bearing any fruits. There have been very little results from that. Now, of course, it is important to maintain a positive mindset, but it's also equally important to look at reality as it is, and to look at as much of reality as we are able to look at, and to push the envelope of how much reality we are able to perceive. So if we are locked down in a tiny little room, and the room has no windows, then our reality is very small. But if we can open a door, walk out of that little room and look around outside, well, now we can at least see as far as our eyes can see. And that's what we all really need to do in order to begin to unwind the levels of manipulation on the various programs that have been woven into our psyches, as you said, for thousands, hundreds of thousands of years even, that is passed down through DNA, and then also from birth, pretty much. We have our cultural indoctrination, we have media indoctrination, we have scholastic indoctrination, we have nationalistic indoctrination, and of course, religious indoctrination. So all of this indoctrination serves to reinforce a certain type of limited perception. And it takes tremendous amount of effort to undo that limited perception. So it's a very easy trap to fall into when you hear the message that all you have to do is think happy thoughts and everything will work out for the best, right? All you have to do is manifest your reality by putting out the correct level of focus, having the correct level of visualization, and then through the law of attraction, you will manifest that thing, because you are creating every single aspect of your reality. When the truth is that there are 7 billion co-creators on the planet, along with many, many beings in higher densities, doesn't make them more evolved. It just means that we can't see them. We can't perceive them with our waking vision, our open eyes. We have to actually close our eyes and go within, use our inner vision in order to perceive them. And those beings are also exerting tremendous control and influence over the types of creation that we can produce. And as far as 2012 goes, or went, I should say, I observed a lot of really interesting things around that. Now, there is, of course, some truth to what's occurring, which was the shift of ages. And the manipulation, or one of the many manipulations, was that that was going to be the end of all of the old systems. And all of the new, more enlightened systems would flip on, as if a light switch was being flipped on, and people would start becoming spontaneously enlightened. And that myth was sold and oversold partially to create that feeling of letdown, the tremendous disappointment that so many people felt when that date came and went, served to feed energy into the hierarchy. And many people doubled down on their resolve to think positive and to listen to everything that the Ascended Masters and the Galactic Federation of Light and the Archangels were channeling through the various, mostly well-meaning channels on the planet. They doubled down on their belief in that because they just felt like they just had to believe a little harder, a little stronger in order to get that reality to manifest. But I submit that we were told that the beginning was the end, that 2012 was just the beginning of a series of cosmic level cycles that don't turn on a dime. These cycles don't just flip on and off. They're not binary. It's a progressive type of experience. And if you think of them as cosmic wheels, in a sense, that are turning, these wheels turn very slowly. And so this golden age, this next age, so to speak, is underway. It has begun, but it's only begun its most earliest steps. And it's up to us to choose how we're going to express the future. How we're going to express in this next age. Are we going to continue to externalize our power as we've done for so long? Well, that's what the beings in charge want to see happen. They want us to continue to give our power away to them. And they will do whatever they need to do to keep that externalization of power going on. Whatever they can do to have us worship them, to ask for them to come and save us from our tyrannical governments, from the secret governments and the naughty illumined ones, or the Illuminatis, if you will. If we cry out to them for help, we're giving them our power. And that's exactly what they want. They want us to feel like we can't take control, that we can't take the reins of power. But it really is a simple process. It's not easy, but it is simple. And the process is simply to realize that we are the power that feeds this system. And if we cease to participate in the system in large enough numbers, the system will collapse under its own weight. That's true in a microcosm, and it's also true in the macrocosm. As above, so below. If we pull our power away from the spiritual hierarchy, and we simultaneously pull our power away from the tyrannical governments, they will both collapse under their own weight. And then we can forge an actual golden age. We can forge an actual society based on true personal free will with the single universal natural law. That free will means we can do whatever we choose as long as we do not harm any other beings. And that the only laws that we need in place are laws that help us to prevent harm from occurring to others. So laws that coerce behavior, because it should be done, or at least someone thinks that it should be done, all of those laws are not necessary. As long as the individuals within the society understand that they are responsible for themselves, that they can and should govern themselves, but they cannot and should not attempt to govern anyone else, to control the behaviors of anyone else. And only when that realization is known to the bone by everyone, and then we're living from that place, will we actually be free.
Well, I think that is the $64 million question, because when we look at one of the goals of their control systems is very much ego-based. And once again, this is the concept of what blinds you worse, you know, staring at the sun or being in total darkness. The net effect is the same. On one hand, we have the aspect of the control system that just saturates one's ego, and they become spiritual warriors. They become spokespeople of the enlightened. They're out saving the world, when their macrocosm, their health and their personal life is an absolute train wreck and a disaster. And then on the other side of the coin, you have the people that are isolated. And it's, you know, they look within, they want nothing to do with the outside world, they can't deal with the outside world, and they're conditioned to believe, if you will, that the outside world isn't what's important, all that's important is what's within. So once again, just kind of sit and spin your wheels, and both of them create that separation from the divine source, and they also create that separation from other persons. Because, you know, we have on the one hand somebody that's looking to save the world and save the faceless, nameless people, because we're all one, that sort of spiritual socialism. And then we have the other side of the coin where it's just all a game and it'll be over soon. I hope, I hope, I hope. So, and once again, we see that everywhere. We see that in the legal system. We see that in the financial system. It's always to be set up as the individual against some bigger good or a bigger bad. and you're starting off disadvantaged because we were born of sin, or we were born damaged, or we're separated from the divine source. We're always, you know, facing some sort of handicap there. And that's like you pointed out. I mean, it's just the cycle where they pick you up, and they hammer you down even lower. And people ask me, you know, do I see an end to this? Actually no, because this is the game that they've been playing. This is what they want. They don't want it to end. You know, they're afraid it's going to end if we do come to that realization. Like you said, the only way to win is not to play. Don't make any of their choices and take that step back and look for that third choice within. And I think I see, like, you know, in your article and a couple other people, I think I see more and more people coming around to that personal empowerment thing. It's time to get our own houses in order before we can go out there and try to save the world.
Exactly. And, you know, the world, it's funny, the world itself, the planet, is fine. Humanity is in trouble, but planet Earth is actually fine. And I see a lot of times people think, oh, we're destroying our planet. No, humanity couldn't possibly destroy this planet. Even if they set off every nuclear weapon and wiped out the majority of life on the face of the planet would renew itself. It might take thousands of years, but it would. So that's of course one of the levels of manipulation. And like you said, there's so many false dialectics, the false duality where you have to choose this option or that option. Pick your side, pick your team. But those are just the choices that the control grid is presenting to us. And if we don't find our inner point of stillness, awareness, power, and knowledge, if we don't come from that point, then we will get sucked into those various false dialectics. We'll think that, oh, we need to rail against capitalism, or we need to rail against socialism, when in reality they're the same thing, just with a different face. They're a system of removing power from the lower levels and sending it up to the higher levels.
I have a question if I could hop in.
Sure.
So my question is, a lot of times, because history has shown that ultimately they come at you in force. So with force is normally on how they start their conditioning, because they soften the masses up via guns, tanks, swords, horses, whatever it might have been throughout time. And then as the situation becomes more desperate and people become more susceptible to ideologies and theologies and all the ologies that are out there, how do you cope with just your inner spirit at that point? Because the first rule in the protocols, as people like to deny, is, you know, right is might, or might is right. And it's been played out through history basically since the 16th dynasty. So, you know, as much as we can sit there and say we want to be spiritually strong, and I'm not saying you shouldn't be, I think you should be, but the question is, how does humanity then stop force? Because it's been in play.
Can I say something?
Sure, we have another caller there?
Yes, this is Olive.
Hi, Olive, how are you?
Yeah, you guys are talking about the Gnostics and how do we take back our power away from the Archons? Mm-hmm. This is the Archons are basically the Greek word is authorities, and that is the world leaders. They are the ones that we got to take our power back from, and that when we reach up to source energy, the great isness, that's what they hate. That we reach, that we are our own creation, and that we are our God, and that's what they don't want us to have, is our power. Whether you live under a bridge and you're poor in LA, or you're a millionaire, the millionaire has got possession, so they're going to be possessed. So being poor is going to be the best way that you're going to find who the great isness is. But the power is what we need. And the concept of our great power is within us. And that's what we need to take back. And I believe, and in the Apocrypha of John, t- talks about the mind parasites, you know, the Archon, the parasitical entities who are running this world. Obama is a parasitical Archon entity, etc. And that's what I believe we got to do. And I see many people doing that here at Wolf Spirit Radio. And that's what I hear you guys sort of talking about here. I was just wondering if you have read very many of the books in the Gnostics. I just came in about 10 minutes ago, so I wasn't sure if you talked about, if any of you guys read the Gnostic Gospels, the Hag Nebuchadnezzar, that was found in the Hag Nebuchadnezzar sacred text.
The Nag Hammadi.
Yeah, it's a hard word for me to say.
Yes, I actually initiated pagan Gnostic when I was 16. So I grew up in it pretty much.
Okay, so you would you agree that the Archons are the authorities, the world leaders?
Yeah, the root of the Greek word, which is where the common vocabulary is coming from, the Nag Hammadis, Joseph Campbell, John Lamb Lash, the contemporaries, is because the Nag Hammadis were written in Greek Coptic. So the Parthenon and the vocabulary that's used is mostly Greek, but you can apply the archetypal concept on many levels, like we were just talking about, as above, so below. But it's definitely a form of parasitism. And yes, that is what they're afraid of. The soul is a creation of the corrupt demiurge, and the soul is meant to insulate us from the divine spark of the creator, what the Gnostics call the antimatter spark of the divine creator. So from that standpoint, that's what we're talking about, is that on all of these levels, the political level, the financial level, and what Pete just brought up, we're going to talk a little bit now, is the military-industrial complex level, is that there's a vertically integrated construction here that's been going on for tens of thousands of years and has just changed with the technologies involved to keep us separated, to keep us in the dualities and the polarities, and to not let us break through the soul and see the divineness that's within us. And now to bounce this back to Cameron and to address Peek's question a little bit, and to address your question too, Olive, and we'll get Cameron's take on this. One of the things I like about Cameron's work is that he's about the personal empowerment. He's about dealing with this. I put his link to the website, to his website, in the chat room. There's a lot of stuff on his website, some great material about how to reclaim rulership of yourself and your own thoughts before you attempt to go out in the world and do the same. So you want to talk about that a little bit, Cameron?
Absolutely. Yeah. So until we have our house in order, so to speak, we won't be able to affect any real change in other people. And that's where change occurs, is within the person, within the individual. So my work is about getting people clear, helping people to deprogram themselves, to take back the power that has gone into the various illusions and deceptions that they have bought into. Because everything we believe, we give power to. And when we believe in illusions and falsehoods, then our power is going to essentially our own enslavement. So taking that power back is paramount to the process. Now, as far as Peek's question about what do we do about the use of force, well, when it comes to physical force, that's really their last most desperate option, I think. They're doing everything that they can to avoid using naked aggression, to really revealing themselves to be the tyrants that they are, because it's much more efficient if they use the threat of force in conjunction with the hypnotic suggestions and the illusions that they weave in the minds of the individual to make them believe that they have to have government to tell them what to do, and that they simply have to get the right person in charge of the government that will make the decisions that they want to have made in their lives. But if it gets to the point where they have to instigate martial law, as an example, and use that force in a very blatant fashion, then that's really the end of their rope. Because as soon as that happens, the people that are waiting for that event will spring into action. It will get very ugly, of course, very violent. But in the end, they don't have enough control. They don't have enough trigger pullers on their side. Those trigger pullers, of course, the enforcement soldiers and police officers are also beginning to wake up from the spell that they have been put under. And make no mistake, these are spells that they are casting. These are dark magicians. These are sorcerers and manipulators that weave spells, that multi-layered spells on the minds of those that serve them. But that servant class, that enforcement class of military and police are also starting to come to their senses, so to speak, and to understand that they have been used as pawns and that there's a potential for much worse to occur if they continue to just blindly follow orders.
I think that's one of the more revealing things that's happening nowadays is it's becoming more blatant and in your face about the Western occultism and the way it permeates the military-industrial complex, the law enforcement community, and even government. I think a lot of the work about the symbologies and the sigils, I mean, the back of the dollar bill is a Solomonic sigil, like, you know, right out of his grimoire. That's probably one of the longest cast-running spells that there is. And I think with the prevalence of all the occult in the movies lately and the pushing of the zombie memes and Halloween's upon us, you know, that's one of the greatest holidays that there is for this sick, crazy world. But we have a lot of that coming out into the open more, and I think people are becoming more and more cognizant of the fact that, hey, it doesn't matter whether or not you believe this stuff. They believe this stuff, and it's working on you.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Pete.
No, I was going to throw a monkey wrench in this a little bit. And the reason why I'm going to throw it up a little bit, and I just want to hear your take on it. Please, I'm not trying to challenge you. I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. Let's take the Middle East, for example. And, you know, we've seen how many years now of turmoil and force being used, correct?
Yes.
It's not really been a last measure resort. It's because the people that didn't want no part of it had it rammed down their throat. And this goes on, and this is why there's 900 military bases across the world. Even prior to this empire, the empire prior to that had the same rule out, and going back in history, it was the same game played over and over until you build the haves and have-nots, is what you touched on. And in that process, it's cyclical then. It switches around and changes out. But I truly don't believe that they use it as a last resort. It's used very quickly if you don't want to take into the leveraged debt system that's created to keep you connected to something that is illusionary. And in the end of all of it, ultimately, force always plays out. Every empire either goes out in a bang of war or it's crumbled, and very few are crumbled by its own society. Very few. Most of them are dragged down purposely in design. So, I mean, we can say that, yes, there is this spell casting, I get you, but regardless of that, history has played out. Murders have taken place on a mass basis and still are on a regular basis. Violence is the choice of enforcement. And for that matter, even in the streets of America, instead of just talking on a macro level, if you don't pay your taxation, you will be thrown behind bars, period. It's a gun to your head. Unless you can dodge and duck your whole life. And that's, you know, an option you can take. But the reality of this is force is always prevalent. I don't always agree that it's the last straw for them. I think they like to use it more and more, and they're becoming more and more prevalent throughout this game.
Okay, I see what you're saying. And, yeah, I was actually talking more about, like you said, the taxation, which is really the threat of force or the threat of violence, right? You know that if you don't pay those taxes, that men with guns will come and take you away and put you in a cage. Now, as far as the empire waging war in other countries, yes, absolutely. That's one of their tactics of control because it serves, well, several functions. The first level is it serves as a form of human sacrifice. And again, it's back to feeding off of that energy of human sacrifice. It's never really disappeared. It's just changed forms. Instead of being a ritualized thing on top of a pyramid somewhere, now it's young men going off to some other country, whipped up into a patriotic fervor, told that these are the terrorists and that you have to go and kill them. And so that force, that conflict, also serves to reinforce that nationalistic programming, that spell of nationalism, that our country is the greatest country, and we have to go and free these other countries. We have to inflict democracy on them, so to speak, at the end of the barrel of a gun or using bombs. So absolutely, violence is a huge aspect of their toolkit. The more subtle form that I was referring to earlier is how they keep the home populace in check and in a state of low level fear of the threat of violence, right? So that you can't ever challenge the authority of a police officer. You can't ever challenge the authority of your government because you know that some level of violence will then be used against you. But if they take it to the, let's say, insane conclusion rather than a logical conclusion of extending that violence and ramping it up to larger and larger levels, it's an interesting thing because you can only really be under these types of spells that these wizards are casting, that these sorcerers are putting us under, when you have certain illusions in place. And one of those is the illusion of safety. So when your country is being attacked, that illusion of safety disappears. So all of the people in the Middle East that are being bombed and killed, they have no illusions of safety. And there aren't really any spells being underway on them as far as the basic social structure spells that are in place. And they are confronted with the stark reality of violence, and they understand very well that the United States government is a force for tyranny, that the United Nations is a force of tyranny and not of social order or well-being. And so if that level of violence reaches the home countries, the Western nations, so to speak, the ones that are inflicting violence on other countries, then the people that have been in that spell and feeling safe in that illusion of safety that they have, they will very quickly be jolted out of that spell, and they will realize that the illusions that they've been operating under were false, and they will then seek to violently resist the violence being imposed upon them.
Cameron, how do we justify the fact that the United States is the most incarcerated country in the world at this point, based on this so-called people not waking up through the spell? Because as we've seen, and I hate to use this as an example, but it is going to be a decent one, Occupy Wall Street, which was a joke, really, in my eyes, but how many heads do we have to see get split open on national television, pepper sprayed, dragged off, hauled off, beaten to a pulp before that violence is no longer? See, this is kind of where I'm kind of stuck here. Violence is already upon us. The lawmakers are lawless. People realize this when you have 1 in 5 on food stamps. People realize this when a country is so incarcerated, mainly over a plant that grows wild, a nonviolent crime, and enslaved into even worse conditions than they were previously came from. The illusion of having freedom as you walk around drinking Coke and Pepsi just get cut short a little bit to the jungle juice you're served up in your local prison cell with your mystery meat. The reality of this is, at this moment in this time, the word peak is what my name is, and I see peak violence right now, and it's fully upon society. There's not a channel that you can't flip on where it's being promoted by the mainstream media as a fear tactic, and I will definitely agree with you. But where I'm kind of stuck is, when does society snap out of a spell, and especially a country like the United States of America that was so patriotic in its freedoms and all its versatilities and has no longer been able to prove that fact now for the last decade?
Well, for a lot of people, well, okay, there's two answers to that. One is that that awakening is occurring quite rapidly in a number of people, and it's expanding quite rapidly. The ones, though, that are firmly entrenched in that spell and insisting on holding themselves within that state of being spellbound, what's it going to take? You know, that's a good question. It's probably for them going to take an actual shakeup of their illusory safety zone. It's going to take some form of incursion, some form of state-sponsored violence, whether it be a tax collector, a police officer, or some other form of state-sponsored violence to shatter their bubble of safety in order for them to begin asking themselves why they've had their head buried in the sand for all this time. So there's really two answers. There's the answer that, yeah, it's serving already to wake people up. The more that the beast system attempts to use violence, to use control, the more it serves to wake people up.
I think another thing here, and it's, in one hand, Peak, I agree with you that there is more violence is being thrust in our faces nowadays, but I look at the overall plan and the way things have progressed for the last 100 years or so. With the increase in tyranny and control, yes, there's obviously an increase of aggression. But I'm looking at it from the standpoint of going back to the Archons and their big power, what's called in Coptic HAL, is simulation. And I'm looking at the war in Syria. You know, 50 years ago, it would have been 4 or 5 days of people screaming in the news, and then missiles would have flown and bombs would have flown. Noticing nowadays that it's more of a psychological game now. It's become actually more of a simulation. They don't need to launch the rockets to get the same or better emotional effect that they're looking for from the masses that have become hypnotized by all of this propaganda.
So violence and Bob has become normalized in a sense because, I mean, it doesn't get more obvious than Facebook beheadings.
Yes.
Right? That's good. So this is my point. Then where does the spell get snapped?
Yes, because- but those Facebook beheadings aren't happening next door to me and next door to you. And that's the point that Cameron was bringing up. And actually, after the break, I want to talk about this some, the personal empowerment is, like we were talking about earlier, collectively somebody going out to save the world or to protest wars or to do things in the context of the collective, that's being replaced with people doing this stuff personally, locally, and individually. And as such, the violence is being tossed out there, and we are being desensitized to it. It's everywhere, but it's still not next door to us. It's still on a computer screen, or it's still 8,000 miles away. Does that make any sense?
It does. I guess what I'm seeing is, with this, you know, age of technology the way we have it, even though I'm not in the United States, but when I watch a man in a wheelchair get dumped out on the street and beaten with clubs, I know that it's on my doorstep as a human being. Unless my critical thinking has gone that far out of whack and I have no emotional play out to fellow life, then yes. But with this, you know, way of communicating now that we have in our hands, regardless of it, I believe the violence is very prevalent in people's faces. There's a, you know, look, the firearm sale, before Obama even went nuts and threatened to take them away, it was already climbing up because people knew there was going to be some sort of a problem with the U.S., let it be financially or whatever it may come out of it. But right away, they understand violence, right? Because they want to protect themselves. So the spell's already snapped, I guess, to some extent, but where does your human spirit take over and say, where's my land, my, you know, the famous line, the line in the sand. Where do I draw my point before it gets right in my face?
And I think that brings us right back to something that you said, which we're going to pick up after the break here. Critical thinking. You said it. You opened the critical thinking can.
I love that one. You know that.
Are you ready to take us to break, Dave?
Just say the word.
The word.
This is Wolf Spirit Radio.
This is Dave from the Wolves Den Studios saying welcome to Wolf Spirit Radio. Wolf Spirit Radio is totally listener-supported by folks like you who choose to help us stay on the air and grow.
And everyone, welcome back to No News is Good News with me, your host, Dr. No, or just plain Bob, and WolfSpiritRadio.com. As Dave said, we are totally listener supported, so hop on over to the webpage, join our chat room. Feel free to give us a call at 775-657-5973 or via Skype at wolfspirit.switchboard, and you can come on if you have any questions or comments, and hunt around for those donate buttons and help keep sick, fascinating programs like this streaming live for as long as possible, as long as we can keep Dave awake, actually. So we're back with the second half of our show here with our special guest, Cameron Day. Once a light worker, now a, well, what do you refer yourself to yourself now as, Cameron?
Divine agent, I like as a term. Healer is fine as well.
Okay.
But it's honestly, the titles aren't really that important. It's who we are and what we do.
Well, I look at vocabulary as one of their primary fundamental sources of control and programming. So I always like to be clear about how people reference things, mm-hmm. especially with the multiple meanings everything has. And joining us too, Mr. Pete Crackers is hanging out in the background, and we have our caller here, Olive. And before we left the break, we were talking about the violence, the perpetuation of violence, and our own personal responsibility to act and participate in this materium. And once again, like I said, I put Cameron's link to his website in there because it's got a lot of information on there. And I'd like for you to talk a little bit, Cameron, about what we can do personally. The violence is out there. The control is out there. And I don't think, like I said, my understanding, I don't think it's something that we as individuals take on in any sort of esoteric spiritual warrior sense. I think there's a more practical definition here of being a spiritual warrior and empowering ourselves. So why don't you chat a little bit about your recommendations and philosophy about reclaiming our power?
So it starts on a, first of all, a small level. You start looking at what you believed in that you know now is not true. And in a state of meditative focus, it doesn't have to be that you're at the absolute deepest level of meditation, but in a state where you are inwardly focused, you look at where you have given your power and you consciously exert your will to reclaim your power that you have given to that thing. Now, on my website, I do have a self-clearing system, and one of the steps in that system is to reclaim power. Another step is to refund energy, and this is to give back the energies that have been put upon your psyche by the various levels of indoctrination that I had mentioned earlier, parents, government, religion, school. And you give that power back. You give that energy back to them because you don't want that energy, that imprinting in your psyche any longer. So refunding of energy and then reclaiming your power, reclaiming your energy. These are two very basic but incredibly important foundational modes of what I call energetic hygiene, so that you are clear on what's yours and you are clear on what has been put upon you. And it's important to understand that essentially everything that we believe has been laid upon us, and it is a structure, a web of deceit, a web of lies. And we have to literally undo everything that we believe so that we can find out what is actually true. So that process isn't easy. It takes time, it takes practice, it takes dedication. And you'll find that there are many, many layers of beliefs, starting with the belief in government, the belief in authority, the belief in corporations. You'd be surprised how many people can't imagine how we could get along without the current configuration of corporations that they have. Belief in society, belief in religion, belief in certain types of gods or superior beings. So all those beliefs have to be examined and undone so that we can see the truth that they were hiding. All of these beliefs are put in place, these spells are put in place to hide the truth from us, the truth that we are extensions of the divine source. We are essentially neurons in the mind of God experiencing ourselves subjectively.
Can I ask you a question, Cameron? This is Olive.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so how does this play into your opinion on the NSA and them using audiovisual spy satellites, scalar waves, you know, voice to skull, and how they're able to manipulate weaker people but make strong people still suffer? Can you give me your opinion on this issue here? And how they draw the power from us from that, and how taking our power back, I agree with you, but they do, could you respond to this issue?
Well, as far as the type of targeting that they do on individuals, that is really a heinous level of crime, because they are essentially removing the person's ability to exert their free will in order to clear out their mind, to clear out their beliefs. This is a type of attack designed to incapacitate a person. Now, I have read some stories about people that have been able to mitigate those attempts, but, you know, it's a very insidious technology that is being deployed by humans without any sort of moral compass. Now, on the flip side, on the metaphysical side, the archons, the beings that I call the spiritual hierarchy, both the false light and the false dark, they employ similar types of technologies, but they're more subtle. They will attempt to influence your beliefs. They will attempt to hijack your dreams and have you experience things in your dreams that are externally imposed upon you so as to alter your perception of yourself and the world. So these attacks are going on really on everyone to various levels. The insane level that it's being done to people via microwaves and Gwen Tylers and scalar technologies, where they actually target an individual and bombard them with these frequencies. That's the ultimate expression of that, the ultimate level of violence, really. But that subtle incursion, that subtle violation of the individual psyche and the individual's energy field is ongoing on a daily basis. As Bob mentioned earlier, they're doing it to us 24/7 to keep us in this state of stupor and giving away our power.
Thank you.
Well, one of the things I know that you had spoke about somewhat, Cameron, is channeling. And from my experience, there's a distinction that I make between, you know, voices in your head and what I refer to as soul speak. This is probably about the best word I've come up for it, is when you get information or when you get in touch with source creator, it's gnosis, it's a knowing. It doesn't come attached, it doesn't come through words, and it doesn't come through a voice in your head. So whether the voice in my head is mine or the voice in my head is the product of an extra dimensional entity, or it could just be a good old fashioned Department of Defense project like the Galactic Federation of Light, which was an entire scripted DOD project for the electromagnetic projection of voices into people's heads. And they started that in the early 50s. So the technology's been around for a long time. And I tell people all the time, any voice that you hear in your head, your own included, you should be suspect of, because the motives, especially on the light side, the motives are not always what they seem to be.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you talk about your own voice in your own head, you need to be suspicious of that. Yeah, that's part of the process in the self-clearing system, is the ego minimizer, where you recognize the ego and then you tell it to be quiet. and that simple process, of course, is something that has to be repeated often hundreds of times a day, depending on how loud the ego is, until it is trained to sit there quietly until it's actually needed, because it does serve an important purpose, which is a navigation of third dimension, third density awareness, and of course also helping you remember to get eggs and milk when you go to the grocery store. So the ego does have its place, but it needs to be kept on a very short leash. Now, as far as the voices in your head beyond that, Yeah, you need to be very, very wary of any being that's talking to you in language, because your true self uses a form of telepathy, uses a form of, I call it soul telepathy, and I know though there's some Gnostic issues with the soul, but essentially it's an inner form of communication, it's an inner form of direct knowing, of gnosis, that information can be transmitted in large amounts, so that suddenly you have all of this information that is in your awareness that you didn't have access to just a moment before. And so the beings that are from the free universe, as I call it, the beings, the forces of divine source light, that's how they communicate. They will communicate to you through feelings, through sensations, and through this, essentially it's kind of like a packet transfer, that you suddenly have this whole packet of multifaceted information that you then have to unpack and explore and understand at a very deep level, which can oftentimes take days or weeks or even longer than that.
Which is interesting to note that when you speak to people in terms of a knowing, they actually mock you because you weren't told by some sort of enlightened being or extra dimensional thing. It's like, how do you know this? Well, I just know it. It was revealed to me. It was shown to me. I felt it. Whatever phrase you want to stick in there. Like, well, you're wrong. Archangel Michael told me, so I'm right.
Like, no, so would you agree that it's individual revelation and individual knowledge, gnosis?
Oh, absolutely. That's the entire definition of it, is that it's experiential. It does not come from any external source at all except for the source. There are no intermediaries. There are no voices in your head.
Right.
They're, you know, the archangels or archon angels.
Absolutely.
You know, if we want to use their full name, you know, it doesn't matter if you're crippled by a belief system, any belief system at all. If you have beliefs which are unsubstantiated tenets that you accept as fact, where did those beliefs come from? And most people are more comfortable saying that they were told them by a channeled space alien entity than saying this is just something I felt and know as a result of a deeply intense personal experience that I've had. And that just goes to show you how effective that their control and separation has been, that they have separated us from our awareness of ourselves that much.
Right.
How are you doing, Pinkster?
I was listening in, and I agree. You know, here's the reality that's created amongst you is your choice, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. I do agree also with the fact of knowing, and knowing is that there are people out there, unfortunately, that have a choice, that want to enforce you by force into whatever fact there may be. Because if you look at all the creation through dogmatic experiences and religions and theologies, either way, it was still force orientated. And you can track this back as far as to the hijacking of Egypt, where it was force orientated. And then after that, it's a submission of that person's spirit through force that eventually allows them to either take it unwillingly, but enough that they would rather have that than a hot stick shoved up their shping-shping. So they deal with it. And you can see each empire pulling that same mentality on them. The way that it's done here and throughout this, let's call it the last, you know, 70 years, through deception and propaganda and every other technique, and what you mentioned in 1950, which was Project Pandora, where they literally openly admitted using microwave experiments, is right on the Soviet, I believe it was the Soviet embassy, where, you know, people came up with nosebleeds and puking blood. It is definitely a fact. So I always go back to this. No matter what individual at this point does decide to take whatever method to wake up, and we always hate using that word, but get out of the trance, whatever you want to call it, learn the truth. Either way, you still have to contend with the factor that there's force. And that force, until it's completely put to rest, and I don't see that coming anytime soon, by the way, that's my call, and I don't want to talk doom, but it's just reality from what I see, is something we all have to contend with, because we're not going to do it by going into a meditative state and trying to wake up. That, if anything, that'll be used against us in my eyes. You can learn right now very quickly because we have access to multitude of information, whereas before, let's call it, you know, in the 90s where I had to mail order books, it took a long time to even source out information. Now I can do it very quickly, and even then I still have to source it out and go by what I know that took place and things that are in place to back it up. Example, the Bank of International Settlements. When people want to argue that there was never, you know, this particular motion to create the system we now know as fiat currency, well, there it is. There is a building. It does exist. It does house. And it does use a method or a unit of labor trading called a dollar. And we get hooked into that through our own enslavement. Now, we can all choose to walk away from that any given time we want, but that is a lifestyle upon itself. And most humans don't want to sacrifice their attachments and attractions is what I always go after. The ego is not something that I always buy into that is always natural within us. I personally, from the research I've done, it's been created through a Zionistic force way back for a whole sole purpose to create a whole new field out of it, which they did, which in return enslaves us in our own twisted ways. What I do see, though, going forward is if humanity is starting to wake up to what you call Gnostic, Bob, and what I just call critical thinking, where you walk outside and you know if it's 40 below, you can't sustain being out there for too long because you're going to die. Some people call it God's law, whatever it may be. This is the wake-up call where if someone can take away your food source, your heating source, your lighting source, the things that you were so preciously holding on to in a snap of a flip or a switch, it's done. You wake up to the factor that you no longer have control. So how do you get control?
Well, this is one of those things to bring it around again, and I want to go back to Cameron on this. Discernment, okay? You mentioned ego, and I look at discernment as judgment minus the ego. And this is why, to me, it's so important to be able to minimize the ego or put the ego away, not because it's not necessary, but because we need to remove our ego in order to make the decisions that we've been making blindly, like you just said, like a switch, okay? These aren't binary decisions, although we've been conditioned to believe that they are. You're either in the system or you're out of the system. You're either for us or you're against. Okay, this is what we've been presented. So you want to talk a little bit about discernment, especially as far as how your clearing goes, Cameron, and how important that is to be able to see past these decisions?
Yes, definitely. And I like the way that you define discernment as well, because there's nothing wrong with judging. Judging in the sense of, you know, the New Age context has been demonized, but you can judge the differences between two things. You can discern the difference between two things. And like you said, you put your ego aside so you can see what's actually occurring. So, you know, there's many worldly examples of that. For example, we're told that salt is bad, but the truth is that salt is in every single cell of your body, and it's necessary for the production of ATP along with glucose. And of course we're told that sugar is bad, but they hold up the examples of iodized table salt and bleached out GMO beet sugar. And of course those varieties of those substances are unhealthy and bad for you. But if you find natural salt and natural sugars and wildflower honey and those types of things, those will actually nourish your cells. So on an energetic level, we have to be able to discern the energies that are coming at us and coming into us and be able to say very confidently, I am sovereign and I do not want your energy in my field. You need to leave right now. And the problem is, of course, that the archons, the spiritual hierarchy, they don't respect free will at all. Their whole agenda is the usurpation of free will, the crushing of free will for their own agenda. But on an energetic level, we have to be able to discern what's real and what's false. We have to be able to discern what is a false dialectic and not choose either of the two predetermined options given to us. We have to be able to discern what's happening in our own psyche, where, and discern where we have been manipulated, conditioned, hypnotized, and spellbound so that we can undo those spells and free ourselves from the essentially self-maintained prison that we exist in. We maintain the prison ourselves because it's been handed to us as the sum total of reality. We're told this is how reality is, and so then we continue to support that version of reality.
I have a question for both you and Bob, actually, because I have to ask, do you believe that we're born with an ego?
No, the ego is a development specific to each incarnation. And like you said, it has been imposed on us, but...
That's if you believe that there's some sort of an incarnation, right?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, you're Pete Crackers in this incarnation, right? So you have an identity as Pete Crackers. And as the result of the experiences within this singular lifetime, incarnation or whatever you want to call it, you have developed a certain type of identity, a certain set of preferences, a certain set of beliefs that you hold and maintain as your identity. But that's just a tiny fraction of the being that you really are. The truth of who you are is much greater than that, much greater than any single lifetime. So part of our process is to understand that we are a greater self, that we have a higher self, or actually I prefer to call it the divine inner self, because when we have integrated that greater self into our body, into our awareness, it emanates from within. So that to me is the true self, and the personality is the secondary self. And the ego then is the result of only identifying yourself as the secondary self.
So if we take ego from what I know it as, Cameron, and please, I'm only just throwing this out for conversation, so don't read into it. I'm not trying to hammer down on what you're saying, okay? Sure. But I'm just trying to give you, my version of the way I see conversation sometimes. When I take the ego was created in, as a medical terminology through Freud, and, you know, being one self in a second dimension is seeing yourself play out in the psyche, which is definitely developed, and I agree with you. And I think it's put upon us more so than even developed. Because if you take children in a sandbox, they don't really care. There's no... In fact, I can even go back to being in an age in your mind's eye where I didn't give a rat's butt on who thought of me of what. Because there was no second thought of myself on how my actions and reactions would take place in someone else's eyes as I would see myself. Now, there is a difference with me seeing myself before I perform a motion, which is the natural sixth sense that we all have. I know that if I'm going to throw a softball, the mechanics of it play out very clearly in my mind's eye. Now, if I see myself throwing that softball with flowing hair in the wind and Fonzie boots on, that's a whole different story. That's the perception that's been played out and put upon us, correct?
Mm-hmm. Can I say something? So ego, you know, self-knowledge as knowledge of God, that's who we would be. We would be our own God's sovereign beings. And so would you call that ego?
I would not. I would call that essentially true identity.
Right. I agree. Peak?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. We all bleed. We all die. In fact, until I can see someone, you know, literally shit out a lake or something, I mean, at this point, I'm just being all of it. I consider myself just a regular jackass of a fella. that's tired of being enslaved to a corrupt system on a regular basis.
I agree with that.
You know what I mean? So when I strip it all down, I try to go right down to the layman's terms on things, because we all are in this one way or another because there is a controlling force. I don't necessarily think that it's of supernatural extent, and some people may disagree, and that's fine. What I see is someone that's become very clever and manipulated their way and got enough people to use force against us to soften us up and accept the terms that they had to offer. And if we don't, we know the consequences. There's not enough people that would trade in the luxury of what I call convenience to have it any other way. People like convenience.
So you would agree that all of us on this panel would agree, even Dave, that taking our power back is fundamental, because if we do that, then they have none.
But all of
I agree with that. I agree with that 100%, actually, and that's one of the reasons why I was looking forward to this show so much, because it is quite literally, we have the perspective here of somebody that's been on both sides of the coin, and that under the guise of doing what your ego was told is the quote unquote right thing or the light thing to do, you're in fact serving the same dark system. And I think that's the thing here is Pete, you use the word supernatural. You can use supernatural. You can use whatever you want. Look at the three big Abrahamic religions. I mean, you can call that supernatural as to the extent of control. I mean, one of the issues I have with the quote unquote light and lovers is that term love. Our definition of love is so selfish. It's got nothing to do with this external goodwill, selflessness. Love is about what makes us feel good, and how many times has love been the excuse to kill or destroy the quote unquote object of what we love? Because it's literally that. It's an object of what we love. It's a self-indulgent feeling, that thing that we define as quote unquote love. And you can see that. I mean, you know, look at Christianity, look at governments, anybody that claims that they're looking out for your best interests or they love you. I mean, you know, cast the eye of suspicion there.
Which in return gives you the attachments and attractions, right? Because you become attached through this mechanism of love. And anything that can be taken away from you will be held against you.
Okay, so you're saying neither loving or hating, just being and allowing to be. Being like, is that what you're saying, Pete?
Well, I agree with Bob. I think that it's such a, love is such a selfish term, and especially in the light crowd, that, you know, it really is a misconception. Like, a perfect way, Olive, is the age old, you know, scenario. Do you love your dog the same way you love your mom? Do you love your mom the same way you love your wife? Love is chucked around all over the place, you know, and unfortunately people just don't really narrow it down to what it is and understand what their emotional connection or attachment or attraction is to it. And as long as there's something to be taken away from you on a regular basis, it's there for that reason, to leverage you out one way or another. Without no leverage over you, then you got nothing to take. Then you're pretty much free, right?
You're saying you love something, you have an attachment to that, and it's pulling energy from you. If you hate someone, you have an energetic cord attachment, and it's drawing energy from hate or love. So what you're saying, I agree with that. Neither loving or hating, just being and allowing to be, seems to be the best state to be at, because then you can learn to know thyself through self-knowledge, as knowledge of God, I believe, and that's who we are. We are each a sovereign being.
And part of this, I believe, the root of this problem, or one of the roots of this problem, is that we have been taught to rely on others to measure ourselves against. We have all been conditioned to be uncomfortable with actually judging and measuring ourselves. So Cameron, could you speak a little bit to the importance of that, of being able to separate ourselves, or our egos more importantly, from all these external judgments and keeping up with the Joneses, and the fact that we have been made to feel so uncomfortable feeling good about ourselves?
Yeah, that's a big one, Bob. That's keeps people really enslaved and really judging themselves harshly based on all of these external criteria, right? You, people are told, oh, you base currency, you have to have and be exactly what 1,000 different sources tell you that you have to have and be. And so the process really of being sovereign is casting all of that aside and saying, you know, I don't care what you want me to be. I'm sovereign. I will figure out what I need to be. I will determine for myself. I will judge myself based on truth, based on an honest assessment of my strengths and weaknesses, based on an honest effort to improve my weaknesses and to strengthen my existing attributes that are already strong. And so when we do that, then we are getting out of that matrix of mind control. We're getting out from under the thumb of the government controllers. We're also getting out from under the thumb of the archontic spiritual hierarchy controllers who would tell a person that, for example, they are unevolved if they have a negative emotion, that if they feel a sense of anger over an injustice, if they feel a sense of anger over seeing an innocent person being beaten by police, that that is somehow wrong and a weakness. Well, that is, of course, a complete fallacy, because anger is there to propel us to take the right actions to stop injustices and violence from occurring either to someone in our lives or from ourselves, or upon ourselves, I should say. So those emotions that we have are all incredibly necessary, including the ones that have been disregarded or judged as bad or negative. It really comes down to balance and understanding what balance really means. And it doesn't mean that you're swinging on one extreme or another. It doesn't mean that you're thinking only happy thoughts and that you're refusing to look at the darkness or the negativity or the evil in another person, or perhaps the selfish intent that another person might have for you, but that you are balanced and you have an honest understanding and assessment of those around you, an assessment of yourself. And so, you know, another one is, of course, judging, right? Oh, you shouldn't judge that person as bad. Well, you know what? That guy's trying to steal from you. Maybe you should discern. Maybe you should have the judgment to understand that that person is attempting to rob you blind and prevent them from doing it.
Well, I think that's part of the conditioning once again. You know, whether you approach it from the standpoint of born with original sin, or we're damaged, or we've been genetically altered, there's a million excuses that they give us for it. But once again, it stems down to the tug of war with the ego, is in one aspect pumping the ego up by giving us all of these false gods to worship, whether it's money or celebrity or whatever. And then on the other side of the coin, those same people that are chasing those external measurements are the ones that have the biggest voids inside themselves. And actually, when you look underneath them, their ego crushed. I mean, they just have no ability whatsoever to look inside, whether they're just dismissive of it or take the other end of the spectrum and they become brutal with it. I mean, I know I'm brutally self-critical. It's just, you know, give yourself no quarter, give yourself no mercy, because that's what the world at large is going to do to you. So, you know, that's one of my own personal reflections on it. But, you know, I think in order to be able to step away from a lot of these control systems, it's extremely important for us to be able to do this for ourselves. And I think that's the first step, the baby step that people have the most issue with, is actually believing that they are the only person qualified to judge themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And seeing that insecurity that, oh, you know, I can't really assess myself. Right, that's a huge ego construct that gets overlaid onto the individual, usually at an early age, that they have to submit to that assessment or judgment from their parents, or maybe their priest or whatnot. Now, as far as that brutal self-assessment, I do think that that is necessary at times, but that we should also be equally self-celebratory, meaning that we can celebrate the truth of who we are beyond our individuated identity in this incarnation, that we can actually tune into and celebrate and embody that inner divine self, that true being that we are beyond this particular personality, and to align our personality and our perceptions with that true self so that we can understand that that's the truth of our being. And even though we're currently a long way from embodying that, that we can work towards that, and that we can then be really honest in our assessments of where we fall short of those ideals of the true divine self.
Well, one of the questions that we have from the chat room from Free Sovereign is, within the context of divine agent or whatever we choose, do we really need to continue within the artificial paradigm of pursuing money and currency so we can be measured and taxed upon our life efforts?
Ultimately, no, absolutely not. You know, when we have a society of sovereign individuals, we'll do away with these archaic notions of money as debt. Now, to get there, of course, will take time, will take a lot of awareness and self-examination. You know, there's of course the ideas like the Venus Project and the Zeitgeist movement that advocate a moneyless society. But to get to that point, there's going to be several intermediary stages. You can't just go from the brainwashed capitalism at all costs model that we have now straight into that other, basically the other end of the spectrum. So to transition there, we'll need to do things such as remove debt from money so that money itself is simply a tool to facilitate exchanges. And then as we go along with our evolving individuals, evolving as a society, we can move towards having less and less attachment of monetary value to the things that we produce. We can actually unleash the technologies that have been hidden away by the secret governments of the world and make them available to everyone on the planet, and have a society-wide goal of raising the standard of living for every single person on the planet so that there is not one human being in poverty. Because when we are truly sovereign and truly awake and aware, we understand that the suffering of any other person on the planet affects everyone else. It's not somebody else suffering on the other side of the world. It's a member of our species suffering that we are intimately connected with, and that there really isn't any separation because we are all extensions of infinite source. And so as we, just a moment, one last thing. And then as we pursue that understanding and awareness that we're all interconnected, and as we get that technology rolled out and deployed on a global scale so that everyone has their basic needs covered, then the need for money will become smaller and smaller and smaller until we actually do reach a point where money is no longer relevant, simply because we have created so much abundance for ourselves and for every single person.
Free energy.
Absolutely. Yeah, it starts with free energy, or really even, you know, we can take steps right now to have sovereign energy production. We can use solar and wind power, for example. Now, of course, all of this at the moment costs money. You know, so getting out of the system as it exists now is going to take effort. It's going to take focus and determination and drive. And at a certain point, when we can unleash true free energy technologies, these types of technologies that Tesla had developed, where he was drawing from the ether that the planet generates in massive abundance in order to generate power, to generate light, heat, cooling, whatever you needed, he could draw from the ether. And when we can deploy those kinds of technologies that I guarantee you already exist in secret underground bases, when we can deploy them to every single person on the planet so that no one is sitting in the dark in a mud hut, unless that's what they choose to do because they, wanted to go out on a solitary journey somewhere away from, the rest of their society, that no person has to exist in those conditions. No person has to starve or be in any sort of lack whatsoever. That's the one of the goals that we need to have as individuals and a collective.
One of the things that I find amazing is when I try to explain to people the fact that these structures that we're talking about here, like the financial system, the monetary system, they don't exist. They're complete and total fictions. They exist only in our imaginations. And I try to, you know, give people practical examples. If tomorrow morning there was to be no financial system, we would still have the same amount of food that we have. We would still have the same amount of energy that we have. Everything that's here, physical in the material world, would still be here. You know, we don't have starving people on this planet because we don't have enough food. We have starving people on this planet because we don't have enough paper to feed them. That's the most absurd thing when you put it in that context. It's the most absurd thing in the world. And you know, this is the important part of trying to show people, when you work within the system, win or lose, you're still empowering the system. And the system's designed this way, and we give it its power. And we need to take that power, we need to reclaim that power in ourselves, and then we need to use that and willfully take our power out of the system and use, you know, Cameron, you use the word like I use it, person. Okay. Only a person can help a person. People help themselves. You know, and that's just the way of the world. And I think it needs to become more personal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, Peak was talking about love earlier. And to me, love boils down to caring. We need to care about everyone, not just ourselves and our immediate family. We need to care about every person on the planet because even though we have multiple races, we are a single species, the human species. And that species is either going to thrive or it's going to implode. And so it's up to us to decide where we go as a species. And it has to be built on caring for each other. It has to be built on that universal law, really, that natural law, that says that we cannot harm others. That's really the only prohibition that there is harming others. We're not supposed to harm each other. We're supposed to cooperate and work together. Go ahead, Pete.
Are you familiar with the history of Arcadian Canadians?
I'm sorry, you said Canadians?
Arcadians.
Arcadians? No, I'm not.
Bob, anyone?
Just what you've filled me in on.
Okay. So here was a cashless society that worked on trade, not raid, for 200 years. Ultimately, it was the first form of ethnic cleansing as we know. This is how interconnected we are. Because I'm going to show you where force has always taken place on a repetitive basis. As much as we try as humans, we're going to either have to stand up and take away the root by force, unfortunately, or it's not going to work. The Arcadian Canadians got away from France and Britain, and I'm not going to get too far into the history. I'm just going to go in enough so you understand it, because they didn't want the taxation and enslavement. They didn't have institutions like schools. They were very much about helping all fellow humans. In fact, the French that came there intermingled very well with the Mi'kmaq Indians, and this went on, like I said, for 200 years. So you think we're in a 100-year debt cycle right now with the Fed. The Brits found out. Said, we're not going to have any part of this. We claim this land in the name of God and the Queen at that time. And they bombed and took them on ships and enslaved them and brought them out to the Keys of Florida, which is where you get the French accent, and also New Orleans, where you get the Cajun, which is derived right from the Arcadian Canadians. This went on to the point where they destroyed the culture so bad and hid it for a multitude of decades. So my point being is, until enough people stand up, and they didn't go by force, the same way India didn't go by force, and what happened? They were beat until two countries were chopped out of it. I hate saying that we have to use force, But unfortunately, the only economy that I ever seen it overthrew a king was when people stood up and said, behead him by the masses until the root of the problem was gone and enough of the parasites wiggled their way back in and derived from what we see now as modern society still enslaved under this illusion. That is pure history. That happened. That's records. It's there. In fact, my family comes from a Mi'kmaq background. This is where I have a problem with saying, okay, we can't empower them. It's not about empowering them or not. They're going to do what they do by force. It's been played out century after century after century. I'm not advocating go grab spears and run out in the middle of the streets and do damage. I'm saying eventually society is going to have to bind together in a forceful manner. And it unfortunately will come down to an us against them situation, or it doesn't. And the enslavement and the wars by proxy go on. Now, we can all kid ourselves, and you can tell me differently, but I'm telling you right now, look around the world you're in and tell me that is not happening. In the most enlightening time, as they say, that we live in.
Well, I would argue against the idea that we're in the most enlightening time. We're on our way to an enlightened and educated populace. Now, as far as the use of force, again, you know, looking at natural law, looking at universal law, the corollary to the law that you cannot harm another is that if someone is harming you, that you can use whatever level of force necessary to prevent that harm from occurring, even if it means destroying or extinguishing the life of the one doing the harm to you. And so, I agree to an extent that at a certain point, as a species, we will have to wake up to the fact that we have parasites, we have psychopaths running our governments, and that they are harming us on a daily basis, and we have to stop them from harming us. Now, hopefully that can be done with a minimal amount of death and destruction. But some force will absolutely need to be used against it. I mean, it's an extension of force to take a criminal and put him in a cage. You have to apprehend that criminal and put them in jail. And all of these criminals do need to be apprehended. Now, talking about Canadian Native Indians, or I hate to use that word, I'm sorry, but okay. the Indigenous Canadians, let's say, I read in an article by Kevin Annette, who works with his website is ITCCS, I believe, .org, mm-hmm. The International Tribunal for...
Yep, Church and State.
Church and State, thank you. So in one of his articles, one of the elders was telling him, of the natives, told him that back before the white man came, whenever anyone harmed a child, either, you know, sexually or otherwise, that person was simply killed because the tribe understood that the health of their future resided in their children and that they would not and absolutely could not allow any form of pedophilia or psychopathy to infest their society. So we've completely, of course, turned away from that, and now the psychopaths and the pedophiles are running the governments. So a purge will be necessary. Force will need to be used to the extent necessary to either apprehend them or simply, you know, a lot of them won't go out peacefully. They won't surrender peacefully. So many of them will have to end up being killed, but it will be a necessary evil, a necessary form of defensive force. Actually, I wouldn't even call it an evil, but a necessary form of defensive force to free our society from the infestation of psychopathy and pedophilia. Because as long as psychopaths and pedophiles and rapists, you know, they need to be included as well. As long as they have free rein to inflict their various forms of violence upon nonviolent individuals, our society will continue to be ill and damaged.
And I like the word purge. I think it's a great word. You're right on the money with purging this poison from society. And, you know, there is written books out there, and a lot of them being dogmatic in nature, that when you read them, that gives this God-given right to be able to enslave fellow man, or rape, or harm, or enslave through force. And I think people need to start looking there almost right away, because of the factor that it's been used for so long to claim some sort of right over top of a fellow human. And I love that word, purge. And it's not because of the movie that just came out this summer. I just think it's the right way to say it. Throw it up. Get rid of it. Get it out. Shoot it out if you have to. But one way or another, it's got to go. Because as long as it's still around, as long as we kid ourselves that somehow it'll take care of itself, or some sort of divine force will step in and take care of it. Well, I mean, we've watched the centuries play out. We've watched the unnecessary deaths take place. We're seeing it in, you know, spots over the world right now where people are enslaved, literally walking under machine gun nests. Palestine's a great example, right? Yeah. You know, it happens on a regular basis. For that matter, Indians are a great example. Let's just take the whole start of North America. You know, let's kill everybody in the middle of the night when they're sleeping in their tents and their wives are there, and while the Braves were out hunting. And let's call that, the democratic way of solving things in the land of the free. So where does it start and finish is when society loses, again, their attractions and attachments to their conveniences of luxuries that they think are so well spoken upon, and get rid of the entities that sit there in the background, and they are human by nature. And we can start with a clean slate from there. I truly believe that there is a spot in humanity. There has been cashless societies that have been proven to work, and they work quite well. And there was harmony amongst people for 200 years. And that's a given, that existed and is not spoken about, because they don't ever want that to come out. God forbid you live without a currency.
Well, I think part of the issue here, or the thing that needs to be different, at least from my perspective, is this. Ideologically speaking, we have always been offered, once again, the binary choice. So, you know, we're conditioned to see that group A are the monsters, and so you need to be in group B to be one of the good guys. And, you know, that, once again, that permeates our entire world, our universe, for that matter, is, you know, who's the good, who's the bad, what side are you on? And I think the difference, if you want to talk about the purge, the difference quite simply is this. In order for this to work, we can't pick a team and just decide, because, you know, that's meet the new boss the same as the old boss. We're just, absolutely, you know, we're in a different cage. So I think part of the thing that we're all in agreement upon here, and we find most critical, is that as an individual person, we need to be sure of our convictions, of our gnosis, of our spiritual, if you want to use the word belief, our spiritual belief system. And then we need to come together, not under a Borg-like collective of a queen bee, whereas, you know, we've become the thing that we've despised the most, but we need to band together, as Cameron said, as humans, against the parasites, against the pedophiles, against the psychopaths.
Right. And as each sovereign beings, we come together for a peaceful resolution, but as well, there might need to be force, as he said, you know. And so that's what we're doing here. And I think the theme here is what you've brought to this show is regaining our power, knowing oneself, and then connecting to the great isness, the source energy, as sovereign beings.
And wow, that brings us to the close of our show here. 2 hours flew by. And I would like to thank Cameron for joining us. And actually, I would like to have you back. There's so much more stuff we could go over. I hope you had an enjoyable session.
I sure did, Bob. Thanks for having me on. I would just like to plug my site for all those listening. It's ascensionhelp.com. That's ascensionhelp.com. The self-clearing system is free. the entire first level. It's a little over an hour. It's broken up into little YouTube video sized chunks. It's chunked down so that you can eat it one bite at a time, so to speak. I encourage you to check it out. I encourage you to take your power back from anything that has deceived or enslaved you so that you can truly say, I am sovereign.
Absolutely, and I put the link in there in our chat room for people. There's a wealth of information on his website to get back your personal power. And then once we are empowered, then we can better inflect that power upon our reality and work together as opposed to working for someone else. And I would like to thank Mr. Pete Crackers for joining us again. And you can find his handiwork on YouTube under Mr. Pete Crackers. And his latest video out there, I'm just going to say two words, finger puppets, guys, finger puppets. You got to check it out just for that. And Olive, thank you for calling in and joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you taking my call.
Alrighty, it's my pleasure. And Dave, thank you again for hosting us. And remember that Wolf Spirit Radio is listener-supported radio, folks. So come over to wolfspiritradio.com/wolfchat if you want to join the chat. Find those donate buttons and send Dave some dinar, because one day that's going to revalue. I'm figuring once the dollar collapses to negative numbers, they'll revalue the dinar.
This is Wolf Spirit Radio.